Imagine, you know, really pouring your heart and soul into building a client list. And then boom, former employees just walk off with it. Is that considered theft, like legally speaking?
That's such a good question. And it's exactly what we're diving into today with this California case.
It's really a must listen, I think, for anyone who's dealing with, you know, non-compete agreements, client relationships, or just that whole balance between protecting your business, but also respecting your employees' right to, you know, move on.
Yeah, for sure. And what's so interesting about this case, American Paper and Packaging Products, Inc. versus Kurgan, is that it really digs into what legally makes something a trade secret, especially in a state like California that's known for being very pro-employee.
Oh, interesting. So we're going deep into California law in this one.
We are. We've got excerpts from the actual court decision and this legal brief that really breaks it all down. So no worries. We'll make sure you understand everything without getting lost in all the legal jargon.
Awesome. So let's get into it. Can you set the scene for us? Who are the players here and what exactly went down?
Okay, so we've got American Paper, which is a shipping supply company. They're basically going head-to-head with two of their former salespeople, Kurgan and Anderson.
Okay.
And American Paper is claiming that these guys basically just bolted and took their customer list, you know, like their crown jewels, straight to a competitor.
Oh, wow. So I'm guessing they didn't just let that slide? They didn't just send a strongly worded letter?
Not even close. They went straight for a legal injunction.
Oh, wow. So can you remind us what an injunction is again?
Yeah, it's basically like a court order, right? It would force Kurgan and Anderson to immediately stop using that list, like shut them down before they could do any more damage.
Got it. High stakes. So what happened? Did the court side with American Paper?
Well, here's where things get really interesting. The trial court initially said no to the injunction.
Oh, so they sided with the employees.
Yeah, they did. But then it went to the Court of Appeal, and they really started digging into whether this customer list was really a trade secret in the eyes of the law. And it turns out, you can't just call something a trade secret and expect everyone to go along with it.
Right. There has to be some kind of legal test.
Yay.
Like a recipe for some famous cookies wouldn't be a trade secret if it's printed on the back of the flour bag.
Yeah, exactly. You're totally right. And that's where this thing called the Uniform Trade Secrets Act comes in, or UTSA for short.
Got it.
And it lays out this two-part test. So first of all, the information has to have what they call independent economic value.
Okay.
Meaning it can't be something that everyone in the industry already knows or could figure out really easily. It has to give you a real competitive advantage.
So going back to our cookie example, it's not just the list of ingredients, right?
Yeah.
It's maybe some secret technique for like chilling the dough or a special way they source the chocolate chips. That's what makes it truly special.
You got it. Now, the second part of this test is that the company actually has to have made reasonable efforts to keep this information secret.
Okay.
Think like, you know, security protocols, limited access, passwords, the whole nine yards.
So just having like a non-disclosure agreement in an employee contract, that might not be enough to win the case.
That's a great point, and it's a key takeaway here, because American Paper did have those agreements in place, but the court wasn't really convinced that was enough by itself. They basically looked at the customer list and said, look, anyone who's in the shipping business could probably figure out who needs boxes and tape, you know? It's not rocket science.
So what does that mean for American Paper? Did the court just say, tough luck?
Not exactly. The court didn't completely shut them down, but they did make this really crucial point. They brought up how California has this really strong public policy that favors employee mobility. They want people to be able to change jobs and compete fairly.
So how did the court try to balance those two things, like protecting the business, but also the employee?
What they basically said was, look, we're not saying that customer lists can never be trade secrets. But in this specific case, American Paper just didn't do enough to show that their list was truly unique or valuable in a way that would give them a real edge over the competition. And California courts, they're going to be super careful with these trade secret claims because they want to make sure they're not being used to basically sneak in a non-compete agreement, which California generally doesn't allow.
Oh, that's interesting. So this is where it gets super important for anyone who's running a business, especially in California.
Mm-hmm.
What are the lessons here? Like if I'm thinking, wait, how do I actually protect my client list?
The biggest one is that specificity really matters.
Okay.
You can't just say this is a trade secret and call it a day. You have to be able to explain exactly why it's secret, what makes it so special, and how much effort you put into developing and protecting it.
So like if American Paper had shown that they did a ton of market research to identify clients with really specific shipping needs, or they had some kind of system for organizing their data that gave them a unique advantage, maybe their case would have been stronger.
Exactly. They really needed to prove what they call reasonable secrecy efforts, you know, things like really strict access controls, internal protocols, even keeping records of who can see the data and for what reason.
So it's not just about saying don't tell anyone. It's about really walking the walk when it comes to keeping this information confidential.
100%. And this is where it gets even more interesting, because this is where what Kurgan and Anderson had to say comes into play. Do they deny taking the list at all?
Okay, now I'm really curious to hear their side of the story. Let's get into that in part two.
Welcome back to our deep dive. So we left off with this big question. What was Kurgan and Anderson's defense? Did they just deny everything?
Yeah, did they just say, oh, we never saw the customer list, we have no idea what you're talking about?
Actually, no. They didn't deny knowing the list. But they argued it wasn't some super secret document that American Paper had, like, spent years crafting.
Yeah.
They claim that it was basically self-generated through their own work, you know, as salespeople.
Wait, so are they saying that they built the list themselves, like memorized it all or something?
Not exactly. But their point was that as salespeople, they were out there doing the work, you know, finding the leads, making those cold calls, building the relationships. They argued that any salesperson in the shipping supply world could have done the same thing.
So it's like their defense is, hey, this isn't a company secret. This is just our knowledge of the industry.
Exactly. And they even said that you could find a lot of these customers in, you know, public directories, at industry events. They even said just driving around and spotting businesses with loading docks, it's pretty obvious who needs shipping supplies.
Okay, yeah, I can kind of see their point. It's not like they had some magic formula for finding these clients.
Yeah, right. And that's a key thing here. The court really zeroed in on this idea of readily ascertainable information.
Okay.
Meaning, even if it's not, you know, readily available on Google, if it's something that's like common knowledge in the industry or pretty easy to figure out, then it's probably not going to be considered a trade secret. Like, imagine if your big secret client list was just like every restaurant in town.
Yeah, anyone could figure that out. But it still seems tricky though, right? Because salespeople do put in the work to build those relationships.
Oh, absolutely. And that's where the court really had to balance things. They acknowledged that salespeople do make a big contribution, but they also pointed out that those relationships are usually cultivated while you're working for the company, often using the company's resources and training.
So it's not always so black and white. Like, who owns that connection with the client?
It's a total gray area. And the court was trying to do both, you know, trying to protect real trade secrets, but also recognizing that employees should be able to use their skills and experience as they move on in their careers.
It's a tough one. It's fascinating, though, especially for anyone who works in sales.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the line between what the company owns and what you as an employee, you know, built through your hard work?
Right. That's the million-dollar question. And it's why we see these kinds of cases pop up so often. I think it highlights how important it is to have really clear policies, you know, defining what information is truly confidential and how it can be used both during and after employment.
So it's not just about having the non-disclosure agreement. It's about actually being super specific about what's off limits and why. Okay, but back to Kurgan and Anderson. Did the court buy this whole self-generated argument?
Well, they didn't completely dismiss it, but they also didn't say it was a slam dunk. They kind of acknowledged, okay, we see the salespeople put in the work, but also, hey, they were using company time, company leads, maybe even company training to get there.
It sounds like a really nuanced ruling, not just siding completely with one side or the other.
Exactly, which brings us back to why this case is so important. It really digs into how the courts weigh protecting those business secrets against also having a fair and competitive job market where people are free to move around.
So we've heard both sides. Let's unpack, you know, the court's actual reasoning.
Right.
What was it that made them rule in favor of Kurgan and Anderson in the end?
Okay, so remember that two-part trade secret test: independent economic value and reasonable effort to keep it secret. The court ultimately decided that American Paper's list, while it was confidential, didn't really meet that higher bar of being something truly unique and valuable, something that gave them a special edge.
So they were basically saying, yeah, you kept it secret, but it's not really that special.
Pretty much, yeah. They pointed out that, you know, this is a competitive industry, and a lot of these shipping companies probably have very similar lists, and there wasn't any evidence that American Paper had done anything like super special to compile or organize their data that would make it more valuable than anyone else's.
So just having names and contact info, that wasn't enough to win.
Nope, not in this case. And here's the big kicker. The court wasn't even fully convinced that American Paper had taken enough steps to actually keep its secret beyond just those basic agreements. There was no evidence of, you know, really tight access controls, security protocols, stuff like that.
It's like they wanted more than just don't tell anyone. They wanted to see that American Paper was treating this list like it was really as valuable as they were claiming it to be.
Yeah. And you have to remember, California courts are super wary of anything that seems like it's restricting people's ability to work in their chosen field. They're going to look very closely at any trade secret claim to make sure that it's legit and not just a sneaky way to get around those non-compete rules.
We're getting a real behind-the-scenes look at how these courts try to balance all of these competing interests. It's fascinating.
It is. And it's constantly changing, too. You know, technology changes, business practices change. That's why staying up to date on the law is so crucial.
Totally. Hey, before we move on to part three, let's do a quick recap of the big takeaways so far for our listeners.
The first one, specificity is key. Don't just say trade secret. Explain what makes your information special and valuable and make sure you back it up.
So if it's a customer list, show how you built it, what makes it unique from what your competitors have, how you use it, all of that.
Exactly. Second big takeaway, contracts aren't enough. Make sure you have those real, actual security measures in place. You know, access controls, data encryption, employee training. You've got to show you're serious about confidentiality.
So it's got to be more than just words on paper. Actions speak louder, right?
Absolutely. And lastly, always keep in mind California's pro-employee stance. Those courts are going to look at any trade secret claim with a magnifying glass to make sure it's the real deal, not just a way to stop someone from working.
So for all the employers out there, make sure your claims are solid, and employees, know your rights, and don't be afraid to push back if something doesn't seem fair. This case really highlights how that whole definition of a trade secret is changing. What might have worked a few years ago may not be enough anymore.
Such a great point. And that leads us to the even bigger picture, you know? What are the implications of this case for businesses and employees in today's data-driven world? That's what we'll explore in part three.
All right, welcome back to our final part, part three, in our deep dive into American Paper versus Kurgan. You know, we've really been digging into the specifics of this case, but now I'm thinking bigger picture. Like, what does this all mean for the rest of us? For businesses and employees out there, especially in this world where data is like gold and everybody's competing so fiercely.
Yeah, this case is kind of a wake-up call, especially now when information really is king. It shows us how the legal landscape is shifting, and that bar for what actually counts as a trade secret is going way up.
So it's not enough to just, you know, hoard all your data and yell, "Mine, hands off." You got to be ready to prove why it's actually special and why someone else couldn't just figure it out themselves.
Right. Exactly. And this goes way beyond just those customer lists. Think about algorithms, software, you know, marketing plans, pricing models, all those things that give a company a real leg up. Those are the things they're trying to protect.
This case has really got me thinking. If even a detailed customer list isn't always considered a trade secret, then what about all the other data companies are collecting these days? Where's that line, you know, between something that's a valuable insight and something that anyone could figure out with a bit of effort?
Yeah, that's the big question that courts are grappling with right now. And as data analytics get even more advanced, that definition of a trade secret is going to keep changing. We're already seeing these cases come up around things like, you know, customer browsing habits, what they buy, even social media interactions. It's a whole different world.
Sounds like a legal minefield. So any advice for businesses who are like trying to navigate all of this?
Yeah, the most important thing is to be proactive. Don't wait until you get hit with a lawsuit to figure out what you need to protect and how you're going to do it. Information's valuable, but it's also really easy to share, copy, and spread. Companies need to get way more strategic and careful about how they manage and protect their data.
So it's not just about like locking everything down. It's about being smart and figuring out what's truly valuable and then putting the right systems in place to protect it.
Absolutely. And it starts with those rock solid policies and procedures and making sure everyone on the team knows exactly what they are and how to follow them.
Right. That communication is key. Everybody needs to be on the same page about what's confidential, how to handle it.
Totally agree. And then second, get specific. When you're writing those contracts, those policies, don't use vague terms like confidential information. Spell it out, you know. What are you protecting and why is it so important?
So instead of just saying customer list, you might say something like a proprietary database of customer buying habits developed through years of research and analysis.
Yes, exactly like that. The more specific you are, the stronger your case is going to be if you ever have to end up in court. And then finally, be reasonable. You know, courts are getting really skeptical of those super broad non-compete agreements and anything that limits employee mobility too much.
So don't try to like lock people down with these crazy contracts. Figure out what's really unique to your business and valuable, and be ready to explain why it deserves that extra level of protection.
You got it. It's all about that balance. Protecting your business, yes, but also recognizing that employees have a right to use their skills and what they know to build their careers.
So, switching gears a bit, what about employees? What should they be thinking about after this case?
Well, first of all, know your REITs. California law is really designed to protect employees, especially when it comes to those non-competes and trade secrets. If your employer asks you to sign something that makes you uncomfortable, go talk to a lawyer and get a second opinion. It's worth it. We're talking about your livelihood here.
Always a good idea. That second opinion could save you a lot of headaches later on.
Totally. And then secondly, remember your own ethical obligations. Even if you're not legally bound by something in a contract, you still have a duty to protect that truly confidential information from your previous employer.
Right. So even if it's not like legally required, a bit of common sense and professional courtesy goes a long way.
Couldn't agree more. And then finally, think about your career strategically. As you gain experience, think about those skills and that knowledge that you're building that's valuable and unique to you. Those are the assets you can take with you wherever you go.
That's great advice. This case isn't just about the law, it's about career advice too.
Exactly. It's about understanding the real power of expertise and knowledge, both from the side of the company and from the side of the employee. And in today's world, we all need to be smart about how we manage and protect it.
Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive into this world of trade secrets, employee mobility, and how the law is evolving to keep up with data and technology.
It's a conversation that's going to keep going, for sure.
I think the big takeaway here is to be proactive.
Yeah.
Be clear, be reasonable, and really understand the rights and obligations on both sides.
Well said.
And on that note, that wraps up this episode of The Deep Dive. Thanks for listening.
See you next time.